Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the Technology.ie podcast, episode 11 for Thursday, December 8th, 2011, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichorn. Dias Marivagas, Kith Faltroivishtak, hello and welcome to Technology.ie. In the Edgecast Media Studios, I'm Conor Muinichorn. In Black Knight HQ in Carlow, we've got Michaela Nealon. Hi, Michaela.
Afternoon, Con. How are you?
Very good. And our special guest this week is Marie Boren, technology and science freelance journalist. Hi, Marie.
Con, hi. How are you?
You're very welcome to the programme. And we'll talk to you later on, Marie, about some of the work you're doing, including Cybernia, the Irish science podcast. Also later in the show, we'll talk about check-in services such as Foursquare and Goala, which is being retired now by its new owners, Facebook. There's a new Irish language social network being developed, and Maxrome, run by Cubic Telecom, launch a new data sim for international roaming. Plus, .XXX general availability opens. Is it today, Michaela, or yesterday?
It was yesterday afternoon.
Yesterday afternoon, okay. And there's only one ICANN accredited domain registrar in Ireland which has .XXX domains for sale. That is Black Knight, and we'll be talking to Michaela later in the programme about that as well. But first to a story which doesn't really seem to have impacted very much here on this side of the Atlantic, but it's created all kinds of waves in the United States. There are US senators writing to the company in question, who are called Carrier IQ, asking them to explain themselves. There are class action lawsuits set up and underway in relation to this as well. The original discovery in the United States was by a researcher named Trevor Eckhart, who it says that he noticed some traffic going out on his company LAN that he couldn't quite account for. And when he looked at it, he discovered that it was coming from employees' smartphones. And when he looked even further, he discovered that there was an application rather deeply embedded on the smartphones and across various platforms and various providers as well, which is called Carrier IQ, and that this is doing some strange things. Had you seen that story, Marie?
Yeah, I actually had a look at the video and that the guy put up on his website, and I thought it was really interesting. There's a bit where you can see that he's clearly got a HTTPS website that he's going through, a Google one, which is obviously meant to be encrypted, but he's actually watching this Carrier IQ code execute, and it's clearly taking the information and it's not encrypted at all. I find that very interesting. And then it shows him again, he's logging on to Google's requesting his location, and he chooses no to not send his information. And even so, the location is shared with this Carrier IQ as well.
Yeah,
so it just seems to go beyond all security boundaries.
It does. Now, it's important to clarify that this is being shared with an app on his phone, and we're not sure whether or not this app is phoning home or under what circumstances, what it is actually doing with this data. But it's very interesting that it's getting around HTTPS in particular, isn't it, Michaela? What it actually is a keylogger.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really surprised by this. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people in the security community would kind of go, "Ha ha, told you so."
Yeah.
It's disturbing, but it doesn't really surprise me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of snooping of data and information going on. I mean, some of it we might be able to see at some point, like this guy's able to notice it on the network traffic. I mean, there's been plenty of crazy requests that come in from various people. Like, remember the one where one lot wanted to put a connection in with every single ISP to kind of give a direct feed into the Gardaí or something.
Well, this
was a couple of years back. I don't know if Marie remembers that story, which was really quite disturbing, but luckily it didn't happen. Nothing would surprise me.
This video that you mentioned, Marie, now, when I was listening to commentary about this story, I suppose it's important to clarify, the guy demonstrates it, for the most part, he demonstrates it that he's not actually snooping on, or he's not actually sniffing the network traffic. He's running a debugger program, which is connected in via USB into his own Android phone that he's using. So he's able to actually monitor what this application Generation Carrier IQ is doing. But as you say, you can see every key he presses, you can see that that information is sent to that application. And in particular, as you say, this traffic which is encrypted, you shouldn't even be able to see the...
That's the one that worries me the
most. You shouldn't even be able to see that string on the network. But that is
the fact that he puts it in airplane mode as well. So you're assuming, okay, you're offline. There's no way that thing's going to be logging. It logs even when he's in online mode.
Well, no, what's
offline mode?
Yeah, but again, it's logging to the application on the on the device itself, and we're not sure what it's doing with it now. And this is why I bring this up, is because a lot of the commentary in relation to this has been that maybe it's just overzealous engineering. Now, in particular, I've also given you links to some of the. Actually, the talk to boards on boards.ie that a lot of companies use. I notice you use it as well, Michele. There's a talk to Black Knight forum there on boards.ie as well. In particular, the question was raised in the forums for the O2, Vodafone and Three networks in boards.ie. And it took several days, as it did in the United States, a lot of people waiting for the answers, and representatives of those three networks saying, we're investigating it, we'll find out, we'll come back to you. In some cases, it took a couple of days, but they've come back, all of those networks have come back and said, O2, Vodafone and Three in Ireland, that application, if it's on a handset, they don't know whether it's on, it may be on handsets, but it's not there at their request, and it's not something that they are using. But Carrier IQ, there's been more, a lot of investigation, a lot of interest in what they're doing in the United States. And it turns out that this software is designed for networks to be able to monitor their networks, to be able to manage what people are, to, I suppose, view in aggregate what people are doing and make decisions on their network management based on that.
Yeah, and the CEO put up a video on YouTube.
He did, yeah.
And defending the use of it.
You were sharing that with us, Marie, and you know, he's defending the use of it and saying this is what its purpose
is. It's quite big, though, Con. He just goes, well, it's good because it helps, you know, operators improve their service, you know, like extending battery life or reducing dropped calls.
Yeah.
Do you really need all that data to extend battery life and reduce dropped calls? That's debatable. And how much information does it gather and how much does it send? And does each carrier have a different request on the data that they get sent?
Yeah.
It's quite vague.
This is the thing. It gets really frightening when you see the communication between two applications on your own phone, like we have through Trevor Eckhart's video. You can see what's actually going to that application. But, you know, in their defense, they would say, well, we just log everything and then we decide later on based on what's appropriate to forward on to the network, or indeed what the network has requested that we forward on to them. And I suppose they would argue that it's a much smaller subset, significantly much smaller subset than the kind of stuff that's actually seen to be logged there. I guess in a way, if they don't do anything with that data, if the application just throws it away, then maybe it's okay, Michele, or what do you think?
See, the first thing I suppose is, you know, something happening in the US doesn't mean it could happen in Europe, because we actually have proper data privacy legislation. That's the first thing. And, you know, the Americans seem to have this very kind of odd view that if it helps the, you know, a company to commercially achieve a particular goal and it just happens to infringe on people's privacy, well, that's fine until they end up before a Senate committee.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at what's happened with Facebook.
What has happened with Facebook?
There was a big decision handed down by was it the
FTC?
The FTC, yeah. They have their, so basically they have to be really good little boys and girls the next, 15 years or something?
20 years, I think it is. And it's all square now and it's kind of swept under the carpet and that's it, done and dusted. Whereas those investigations, as you point out, are still going on here in Europe.
Yeah, and they will continue all the way through until the Europeans are completely satisfied that every single aspect of it has been fully investigated.
Is that something you see, Marie, that there's a difference in attitudes in society and in the legal and political world to privacy in, say, the United States and there is to what there is in Europe?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at least with the certain things that have been picked up here and in Europe that haven't been picked up in the US, like with Google, with Google Street View. And remember, lots of wireless information, data they said they didn't use, but was being scraped from wireless connections. And this was something that had been going on for a while when they were gathering information for mapping. And it was the Data Protection Commissioner here that had actually picked up on it. And then all over Europe, various people were refusing to have their houses and their, you know, the face blurring and the registration plate blurring that came in. But again, that was requested by people in Europe, where in the US, people didn't seem to notice this, or they didn't seem to really mind that much, or else the laws aren't there to actually protect them. So there was a big difference. I think the big tech companies that sort of transported over from the US, they've had to be reined in by our, like Michaela said, we've got good laws here, so they've had to be reined in by that.
Yeah, and not only face blurring and registration blurring, but in Germany you can have your house and your street blurred.
Which is great. I mean, why not have your privacy protected?
Yeah.
Actually, there's one thing I just want to point out that a lot of people listening will probably straight away wonder, is this Courier IQ, is it on my phone? So it's probably a good idea to sort of set out really clearly how in Ireland, like you said, boards.ie had discussions on it, and the three main carriers, Three and Vodafone and O2, all came back with the official statement saying that it was nothing to do with them. They had no relationship with Courier IQ. So it's good to know that it's definitely not installed by them or being monitored by them. But Apple as well, it was another company, a manufacturer that came out, and they said that they had stopped using it but had in the past. Whereas Android phones, it was just different because there's so many different manufacturers. So I thought that was interesting that Apple said they'd stopped using it. But just digging around a bit more, it turns out that it's still actually not blocked for the iPhone 4, not the 4S, but the iPhone 4 on the iOS 5. Which is actually what I use, so I thought that was sort of interesting.
So it is on the iPhone 4S using iOS 5 does have.
Yeah, if you've got the iPhone 4, not the latest one, but
yes,
the first one, and you're running iOS 5, it could be on that.
Okay.
But this could just be for American carriers. Again, if O2 here and Vodafone and Three aren't installing it, that's okay. But there was this little sort of step by step that I found online, which was good. It told you how to go in and make sure that your data wasn't being sent anyway anonymously.
Okay.
So you can go into the settings and switch that off, which is good to know.
Okay.
And you can see what is being logged and what's not.
And I suppose, you know, if it's not, even if it's not, even if the network provider isn't using the Courier IQ, if it is active on your phone, that still is something you don't want. If you lose that phone, you could have, for example, potentially encrypted data that you had used, for example, such as passwords and things like that, could actually be retrievable from the logs stored on your phone by this as well. Michaela, are you with us?
I keep putting myself on mute just to make sure that you don't get any kind of background noise and stuff like that.
No, that's fine. I thought we'd lost your connection there. Let's move Michaela. And the next thing I want to bring up, which of course is something dear to my own heart, which of course is the Irish language. And this was a press release which you sent on to me, which you got from PR person in relation to a new social media site for the Irish language. What's this about, Michaela?
It is what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
It's a new social media site for Irish speakers, for Gaelgors.
Yeah. I can tell you.
I don't know if it's even accessible. No, it's still not accessible.
It's not live yet. No.
Actually, I emailed the PR company and got the password there.
Did you?
So I had a quick look. It's not being officially launched until January 2012.
Okay.
So why did they send a press release out to a password protected website without the password?
I know, I had to actually request it.
It's like a PR fail.
Well, the website, when it is live, is going to be at aberlath.com. I haven't had a look at it, but I'm going to ask you about it in a minute. But it is an initiative of Coláiste Lurgan, who are one of these Irish colleges that are held all over the Gaeltacht areas, of course, for teenagers in the summer months in Ireland. And I don't know, Marie, if you had seen kind of the precursor to this, but Coláiste Lurgan have been doing some very exciting stuff with social media, with video production, and I think kind of inspired by the success of the TV show Glee, they did a sort of a Glee version or a musical version of, say, Thoríocht Dearma the Gascroigne over the summer, which was put out on in high definition on Vimeo, and I think there was a YouTube version as well available. Absolutely fantastic stuff, amazing video production, and they did mention on their website that the next step they were going to try and go to it was a social network. So you've had a look at it. What's it like?
I had a quick look, and it doesn't look like Facebook or anything. It's quite image driven, so it's got a series of updates when you hit the homepage, and like I said, image driven with some text updates underneath. So I couldn't actually sign up. It seems quite new. It kept bouncing me back to the homepage when I tried to actually sign up.
Yeah.
So I haven't had a good deep look at it, but it seems to be fairly active already. A good few different users on it.
Did you go to Irish College yourself?
No, I didn't, actually.
Didn't you?
I actually loved Irish in school. Yeah. I loved it for leaving Saracen. I loved Irish poetry and literature, but I'd never got around to doing the summer school thing.
Yeah. What about you, Michaela? Were you ever on a Gaeltacht course in summer months?
You do realise that's the only language I actually ever failed an exam in, apart from...
Oh no!
GCE level Spanish, which doesn't count.
We were talking about this last week, you and I, and you were saying that you think the vital ingredient to fluency in a language is to have a romantic relationship in that language. And
I think I use much blunter terms than that. In fairness,
but in your case, that you'd never quite had that opportunity with Irish. So, but I didn't realise now that things were that serious, Michaela. We'll have to get to work on you. We'll start off with the basics, I think.
I loved Irish, and I ended up with a B in it for my leaving cert, but I can't really remember most of it. So the key to keeping the language alive probably is actually speaking it every day.
It is.
So,
well, this is
or updating on a social networking site every day, maybe.
Well, I've got to say, this is a kind of a hobby horse.
You have dialogue.
Pardon, go ahead.
You have to have dialogue. I mean, just posting something, a monologue is pointless.
Well, I've got to say, this is a bit of a hobby horse of mine. And in fact, this is, I would say, the one factor which invited me or enticed me into social networking going back 7 years now at this stage, to blogging as it was at the time, I suppose, and then later Facebook and Twitter and things like that as well. And I think a lot of people get engaged in online activity because for one reason or another, they want to use some kind of aspect or indulge some kind of aspects of their personality or their interests, which don't have the opportunity to do in real life. So they might be particularly interested in art or music or cookery or technology or something like that. And so they go online, they find like-minded people, perhaps who share interests that they don't necessarily share with enough of their neighbors, you know. So this is, I think, what drives us online. And just speaking from my own experience, I have to say that the Irish language is no different. And in fact, you will find pockets of Gaeilge all over the internet, and not just in Ireland as well. This was the extraordinary thing I discovered 7 years ago when I started podcasting in Ireland, or in Irish. I discovered a spike in my traffic in September, which came from New England in the United States. And I discovered that all the night classes had started up again for people who wanted to learn Irish language in Massachusetts and Connecticut and places like that. And they
so
were
maybe
all,
this website's something that they can go to then when they start their night classes.
This is the thing. And I think it's a particularly good move. Now, I do have to take issue with one claim that's in the press release, which is they say that it is the world's first social network exclusively dedicated to a minority language. I doubt it. And in fact, I know for a fact that it's not the world's first social network exclusively dedicated to the Irish language. Because I was involved.
There's a Welsh one already.
Pardon?
Surely there's a Welsh one already.
There is, and there was an Irish one about 3-4 years ago that I was involved in. Now, that was actually, as it turned out, more geared towards businesses and startups in the Gaeltacht. And so it wasn't particularly targeted at young people, which this is. But what I think is absolutely fantastic about this is that this is a way to extend the influence of your 3-week intensive summer course in the Irish language to really extend it beyond that 3-week time slot, and indeed beyond that place. Because what you find happening is these teenagers are going on courses in the Gaeltacht, and then they come away from the Gaeltacht and they've made friends, well, maybe not for life, but certainly for several months, and they're all keeping in touch on Facebook and Twitter after that. It's an opportunity, I think, here for to extend the influence of that Irish language experience for longer than just the 3 weeks.
But I do think it's definitely, the focus is educational more so than casual social networking for like Gael Gorries or something.
Yeah.
I think they're going to probably use, obviously you can sign into Facebook, Oscar Elgia. And I know people who do that, people that speak Irish on a daily basis, and they just log in automatically in Irish language mode. So I'm not quite sure if they'll migrate over to an Irish language only social networking site, because then that would end up excluding their non-Irish speaking friends.
Exactly.
They're just sitting on Facebook already. But it definitely seems like a great way for students of Irish to practice and get comfortable with the language. But like Michaela was talking about dialogue, I don't know, like updating it's great, but I still think it needs to be complemented rather with face-to-face sort of chatting in Irish. So.
Oh, absolutely. But again, I suppose if it is associated with these, and I know that a lot of these summer colleges extend, they have kind of, you know, winter meetups and things like that as well. So I think, yeah, you would definitely need some kind of a thing like that. And you're right about people, I suppose, who just use Irish as part of their daily lives. We're all bilingual. You know, if you look at my Twitter stream, you'll see there's maybe, you know, there are Irish tweets and English tweets all mixed up in there. And sometimes languages mixed even in the same tweet as well. It's not a,
yeah.
It's not, you know, and it's not a big deal.
You've obviously got used to finding the fodder on the iPhone. It took me a while to realise I had to press down.
Yeah.
for a little while.
There you go. No, it's good. And that kind of stuff has got easier as well, because I know the predictive text and stuff like that, it used to be next to impossible in you know, when we were in that predictive text phase, which I'm back into again now. I've my Android phone died last night. I dropped it. And you'll never guess what I'm using, Marie, is a Nokia N95, 8 gigabytes. You remember those? They were all the rage there a few years back.
That's going back a few years, but not too far.
It's not, no, but it's funny to go back to that sort of pressing buttons and sort of way of using
rock
things.
Rock solid phone call.
Absolutely, right? Rock solid. And
it has a kickstand, doesn't it?
Or which?
Is that the N96?
The N96 was a terrible piece of junk.
Yeah.
No, this is amazing. It's rock solid. But as I say, I haven't used Android and iPhone for the last 3 years or so. It's kind of it is strange to get back into this again. Let's move on anyway. We just want to mention the name of that website. People can visit it. It's at Aberlath, Aberlath.com, isn't it, Marie? Yeah. Aberlath.com.
So we'll write Lath to Aberlath, but in January.
In Beshish, in Erfoil, in Mianna.
And in March, actually, they were saying on the site that there's going to be an iPhone and Android app for it. So
yeah,
that'll make it a lot easier to use.
That will definitely, that's going to be fantastic. Very good. I've headlined the next one, Gowalla Goes Awalia. Because it's a story that Michele sent my way a couple of days ago in relation to Gowalla and these sign-in services. I've always thought of, you know, when you'd be talking to somebody in Irish, actually, you could say that go Gowalla literally means go home. So I always thought about that in relation to Gowalla, but I won't be thinking about it much longer because Gowalla, Michele, is finished.
Yeah, this is kind of curious because it was acquired late last week by Facebook. And, you know, the rumours were flying around, you know, they've acquired Gowalla. You know, everybody's got ads to do this, it's to do that, it's to improve certain things that Facebook have been trying to do and have been failing. But now it turns out that it looks like they may be just holding on to the staff. They're dumping everything else. And the social network, in inverted commas, the service, whatever you want to call it, is going to be shutting down possibly as early as January.
That's something we often see, isn't it, with companies like Facebook, and Google have done it as well. They're not interested in it as a going concern when they buy these companies out. It's sometimes the IP, but more often than not,
it's the expertise. Yeah,
yeah, it's talent acquisition, really, isn't it?
It just seems like such a shame. It's a waste. But then again, I hardly ever use Gowalla. It never really had stood a chance in comparison to Facebook, or to Foursquare, rather.
And Facebook, of course, has its own location service or check-in service, doesn't it?
Yeah, they seem fairly happy with it. I mean, who knows? Like, it seems like they're not going to basically use any of Gowalla's features.
Mm.
So, but Gowalla did, like you said, Gowalla goes Awalia. It is going home because it started out as a Facebook app, and now it's back in, well, the staff are back in Facebook. So it's, yeah, but it was weird. It started out as a pixel art company. And you might have noticed it's got a very pretty user interface in comparison to Foursquare. And I've always thought that it's like such a pretty app. And then I go, oh, well, and just turn it off. It looked pretty, but wasn't really something that we got much use out of.
Would you believe I've never even been tempted to visit it, Marie? We were talking about this, you and I, earlier. I don't get these check-in services, or I don't use them, or I don't feel that as a settled, middle-aged guy without a social life.
You're an old fogey, Con.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I'm interested in stuff, and I'm interested. I tweet and I do a whole lot of other stuff.
You're not kind of part of that young hip scene, you know? You're not kind of going out in the middle of Dublin, man, wanting to know where all your friends are.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm missing. Unlike yourself, of course, Michaela.
You're missing the whole bourgeoisie idea of going, look, I'm buying organic vegetables at Fallon and Burn.
Yeah, well, as partly that. Well, where do you, let's say, as a user of these, first of all, did you use Gowalla, Marie?
I just signed up for it. I friended a bunch of people that I already knew on Facebook and on Foursquare, and then I did pretty much nothing with it.
Was there room for it? Was it possible to have more than one check-in service, or was that just too much trouble?
It was not that there was anything wrong with it, but because it was basically more or less a copy of the functionality on Foursquare, there was absolutely no need for it for me.
And all your friends were on Foursquare anyway.
You could actually hook the two together, though. You could actually hook the two together. So you could hook Gowalla to your...
I never even bothered doing that.
Mm. You could hook your Gowalla and Foursquare accounts together. But the problem is, of course, yeah, sure, you check in on Gowalla, which checks you in on Foursquare, but so what? What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. It does seem a little bit pointless. And then, but even Foursquare, the user base declined when Facebook brought in the check-in element, because it's just so much easier. Everybody uses Facebook. So people who'd never heard of Foursquare were starting to check in and do this location-based social networking, which might actually kill off Foursquare in the end, who knows. But at least Foursquare had a sort of a point with they had these offers where if you checked into certain restaurants or pubs or cafes, they would actually have some sort of a deal. So the first 50 to check in would get a free muffin, or maybe if you check in, like I did it with a pub in Dublin a few weeks ago, I got 2 pints for the price of one because I checked in.
Excellent.
Yeah, so you have to go wherever you can get 2 points for one.
Yeah.
That'll make you use location-based social networking.
Yeah. Well, what about you, Michaela? Do you use it?
As Marie says, you know, some places were running interesting offers, and there's still quite a few who are still doing that. I mean, even in Montenegro, the only Irish bar in Montenegro, or one of the only Irish bars in Montenegro, which is in Budva, give them a plug there. Mm-hmm. If you check in on Foursquare, you get two beers for the price of one.
Right.
And that's one way to motivate people to check in.
Yeah.
And as a business owner, you can make your business premises, you know, you can manage it. You can decide who's a manager of the premises, who's an employee. If it's not an office, in other words, we don't qualify, if it was a shop or whatever, we could set up special offers and everything.
Yeah.
So somebody checking into Black Knight would be able to get, you know, a discount on something. But of course, unfortunately, we're classified as an office, so they won't let us.
Mm.
But things like they're tying in with other third-party services. So now if I go to check into the local cinema, it'll offer me a list of the films that are currently playing, so I can say, you know, I'm going to see film X.
The shine has kind of gone off it, though, in recent years, hasn't it? It's not, perhaps, it was a bit of a craze there. It was the latest thing. It's more settled down, I think, now, hasn't it?
Well, the problem with all these things, Con, is, I mean, you know, what's my motivation?
Exactly, yeah.
What am I getting out of it? I mean, the special offers are great and everything else, but unless you're able to take advantage of those special offers, what's the point?
Yeah.
In the beginning, Foursquare, sort of the shine, I suppose, was that you were ranked in order of how much of a socialite you were and how many check-ins you had in comparison to your friends, and you got badges.
And so you could get the mayorship. You could become the mayor of a place.
Exactly, yeah. People are going... Yeah, but that started to lose its appeal for me when somebody was like, I'm the mayor of the Esso petrol station or whatever on whatever road.
Just you saw that, didn't you? You saw me coming in as the mayor of the Esso here in Carlo. Come on now. You're just jealous.
And that's exactly... But seriously, McKay, when you start boasting that you're mayor of a petrol station, that's when you know that sort of service has become...
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I totally agree. I mean, but then again, if I was to come up as the mayor of a lap dancing club, that might provoke a bit more discussion.
Well there you go. You've got some kudos there. Yeah. That's something to brag about amongst certain circles.
Or notoriety, whichever. But, what do you think, I mean, is Facebook going to win this battle of the check-ins, Marie?
maybe. I mean, it usually does with everything, doesn't it? I mean, it's good. Google, Facebook, basically. Well, Google has a location thingy as well now, and I say thingy, which shows that I clearly don't use it very much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's usually going to be the big ones like Facebook or Google that will win out. But Foursquare is not doing too badly. It seems to have settled into a smaller niche now, and people are still, like I said, people are still using it for offers, and they still like becoming mayors.
I think you need a certain population density, which maybe we do or don't have. And certainly, it's I don't find myself in places that I would have a lot of check-in opportunities either, or that would get a lot of footfall. But certainly, if you are in a in an area with a certain population density and a certain amount of footfall, I think there's certainly more of a case for these things. We'll move on. We've one more story on our list here before we get into part two, and I want to talk to you in particular, Marie, about Cybernia and some of your other work. MaxRome launches new data sim. Michele, you sent this story our way. It's our friend Pat Phelan of Cubic Telecom. They've launched yet another product.
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing some interesting stuff here where with, I mean, MaxRome is, you know, it's all about making it easier for people to roam, because a lot of people, the carriers don't give them particularly good pricing if they're moving outside their home base, their home country. And, you know, the American carriers are particularly bad from what I've been able to gather talking to American friends. Now, some of the European ones probably wouldn't be as bad because we've got certain controls and things like that. But data is an area which, no matter which carrier you're with, you're probably going to end up hurting. So what they've done here is,
yeah, we've all got the bill like that, haven't we? We've all got that shocking bill from some kind of data activity abroad. Marie, you were saying.
Yeah, I've had bill shock a few times, and I remember telling that to Passy, and he was like, "Well, go use MaxRome. It's unbelievable, like what you can rack up in a space of one day just checking email. It's pretty scary."
Yeah.
So, like, I can understand the unique selling point here. I mean, it's just straightforward bang for your buck. There's a massive difference in the price per megabyte when you look at what MaxRome are offering to what the carrier, like Michele was saying, the carrier will just basically screw you over.
Yeah. The carriers, though, have moved, haven't they, to sort of close this gap a little bit?
Not all of them.
Prompted by competition from people like Cubic. Not all of them, you think, Michele?
No, what they've done is they're still kind of playing catch-up. So depending on which plan you're with, which carrier you're with, and what your usage is, you can end up in crazy situations like where we plugged a laptop into somebody's phone a few weeks ago up in Belfast and got hit for €30.
Right. For something
for like 5 minutes of usage.
Checking a bit of webmail or something like that. You travel a lot, Michele, and I know you're heading off on a trip now shortly. Do you use MaxRome?
No.
No. What do you do?
Basically, as you probably know, a lot of the carriers have this awful habit of kind of changing plans all the time.
Yeah.
So Vodafone, some people ended up on a particular tariff at one stage about a year and a half ago,
right,
which gave us free on-phone data. Might have been a billing anomaly on their end. But as long as we don't change the plans, we keep the pricing. So for me, I'm not getting hit much with data usage if it's just for on the device. In other words, I'm not using tethering, as I'm not hooking up my iPhone as a modem to my laptop. Mm. So it doesn't really impact me that much. And then a lot of the time I'd be on Wi-Fi networks anyway. So you get Wi-Fi in the airport, Wi-Fi in the hotel, Wi-Fi at the event I'd be going to. So it's only just the phone calls themselves. And I'm not a heavy phone call person anyway.
Well, I know it's certainly something I've used, and I've used in conjunction with other things like the Wi-Fi available in resorts and places like that. I know we went on holidays.
Yeah, I think the same as well. It's sort of a mixture of whatever's going to work out cheapest.
Yeah, I think last year I travelled with a data package from O2 with a MaxRome voice sim, and with I think Wi-Fi in the place I was staying as well. Pat Phelan has done amazing work in terms of building this up, and really he's a guy with a vision and a mission. We were just talking this morning, Michele, we're going to have to invite him on the show as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the kind of stuff that they've done, I mean, it's very interesting because they're not selling fluff.
Yeah.
They're selling something which, you know, real businesses really use, solving a real business problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I got hit for a data roaming charge there over in Brussels earlier this year for, like, you know, €50 for 10 minutes because I wasn't aware of the billing policy on a particular type of usage.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if this Max Roam data thing had been around, I'd have only been hit for, you know, the maximum being whatever was on the SIM.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. Like, for us, we don't do prepay. We do everything based on the contract.
Yeah.
And once you turn on roaming, that's it. There's no cap. You can't cap it.
This is it. And this is where you get into trouble. So we're
you can end up in a world of pain.
What Cubic Telecom are selling is a prepaid SIM here, which really gives you control over things as well. We'll talk to we're definitely going to try and track Pat down. I've been trying to interview him for about 4 years, Michele, but one of these days. Have you interviewed him, Marie? Have you
several times? And I've actually done radio with him, where the two of us sort of co-hosted alongside George Huck. So
wow,
he's fun to interview and to actually be the interviewee sort of with as well. So
it's
funny.
He's from a real place as well, which is great.
Cork. Marie, will you stay with us, please? Because I want to ask you about what you're doing at the moment with Cybernia and that. Michele, I'm going to let you go shortly because I know that you're travelling later on today and you're going to want to get moving. But before you do, tell us what you're up to in Black Knight. Of course, the podcast is brought to you, technology.ie, in association with Black Knight. And you've got some interesting stuff going on at the moment. You've got a special offer for the budget, which you're going to tell us about in a minute. But first, you're flogging smut, Michele, are you? You're .XXX.
I'm selling porn. No, I'm selling dreams. Oh, wait a second. What am I selling again? I don't know.
Dreams. You're selling.
Yeah.
Selling safely labeled web content that's not suitable for minors.
That's how
something
to,
like
yeah.
that. Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things that we've been kind of struggling with. And, you know, yesterday we decided, well, look, it's the launch. Let's just go for it. Let's just do the entire thing.
Yeah, you've been kind of struggling with it, Michele, and it seems you've decided, okay, struggle over. Let's embrace this wholeheartedly. I'm looking at the ads on your website. Have you seen these, Marie?
I've seen them on Facebook, yeah. I've seen them on Michele's status update.
Yeah, for sure.
Some choice pictures.
Yeah, so you've decided, now we better say that these are, I suppose, they are they're reasonably safe for work. They're a little bit suggestive.
They're completely safe for work, for God's sake. You can't, I mean, if you want to see something which is unsafe for work, there's a lot of websites I could point you to.
Indeed.
Which people would consider to be work safe.
Indeed.
I mean, the thing is this, what we've been trying to do is just coming up with stuff which is a little bit cheeky, and just playing around with it. I think the one that has the best caption is the All Undressed and Nowhere to Go.
I haven't seen that one there. That's
on there. Yeah.
These are on the blog.
With the legs.
If people want to visit blog.blackknight.com, the title of the blog post is XXX Goes Live and This Is How We Push It. You've got Naughty or Nice. You've got some ones which are evocative of, do you remember that poster a few years ago, Expose Yourself to Ireland? And there was a guy flashing a flock of sheep, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah, well, we've got the Expose Yourself to the World of XXX. If you scroll down to the bottom of the page, there's two versions there. One which has got that kind of nice age sepia tone type thing.
Yeah.
Another one which is in brilliant Technicolor.
I've got to ask you this again, Michele. Are you seriously expecting that somebody will launch an Irish-themed adult website, or are they out there already?
They're already out there.
Really?
Of course they are.
Irish-themed.
You know, something like, you know...
I
don't even
want to
know how the leprechaun comes into this. So, yeah.
What I mean is something that's identifiably Irish, or maybe not even that, but let's say Irish-owned, Irish-managed, and I suppose featuring Irish talent.
There's plenty of adult content which is aimed at the Irish public.
Yes. You won't find it on .ie, though.
Yeah, you would.
Oh, would you?
Of course you would.
Oh, interesting.
You would. I mean, there's been stuff in the past. I mean, there's been a number of different sites. But you see, the thing is, the .ie registry, the thing is, what they're adjudicating is the registration, not the usage.
Right. And that's all they care about. The other thing I want to ask you about is it's also on your blog as well. You've decided to try and cheer things up for the budget, and you've got some special offers to save money.
Yeah, I mean, this is something, you know, we do put out special offers as often as we can within reason. And I mean, with the budget thing, I know a lot of people are kind of going, God, you know, I'm going to lose X amount of money next year. I'm going to be paying more tax, I'm going to be paying more of this. So we done as we thought, well, look, let's have a look. Let's see what we can do. So we're offering discounts on both the cloud hosting, our normal hosting. And since Silvio Berlusconi's leaving Italy alone, we thought, well, why not give a discount on .it domains?
Right. Is fec.it gone? I suppose it is.
Well, have a look for, for yourself. You can go onto our website and there's a discount on there at the moment, so you get nice and cheap.
It's €5.99. Anyway, listen, Michaela, thanks a million for joining us, and we're going to let you go. Marie, will you stay with us?
I will indeed.
Very good. Stay with us for part
two. Lovely talking to you, Marie.
You too.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Welcome back. You're listening to technology.ie. We've said goodbye to Michaela. He's heading off on his travels for a few days. And Marie Boren of, I was going to say, of Silicon Republic it was once upon a time.
Oh, yeah, formerly, yeah, last year.
Formerly.
I worked for Silicon Republic for about 3 years.
And Gadget Republic, I know you were involved with.
That was my baby as well. It was an offshoot of Silicon Republic that's since been closed down.
Okay.
But in the meantime, I went back into EducationCon. I decided I wanted to be a science communicator.
Right.
So I went back to do a master's in DCU, and I finished that up there about a month and a half ago.
Now,
but in the meantime, I'm a freelance technology journalist for the Irish Times.
Very good. And of course, science communication is, and technology journalist, it all ties right in there, of course. Was this a course that was actually set up with that title, or was it just a particular area you decided to pursue?
No specific course, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd been looking at it for a few years on and off, eyeballing it and going, God, that's a great area to go into.
Yeah.
Because I love writing about technology, but I also love writing about science. And I was like, how do I break into that? Because it's sort of a different style of writing. There's a lot of... it's not just technical stuff that you can get used to. It's, you know, you have to get all the various scientific terminology right and know how to approach experts and get the best from them. So, you know, I decided to go take that course, which was a good sort of way to get into the whole scene as well. So.
It's different, but not entirely unrelated. And it's not surprising that someone who's interested in writing about technology would be interested in approaching a broader science thing. And certainly I know that a lot of us who are interested in reading about technology are just as interested in reading the kind of articles that people write about science that as well.
I suppose it doesn't sort of deviate too much, because I was one of those kids. I was like, when I grow up, I want to write about computer games.
Yeah.
But it's changed sort of slightly since then. I sort of graduated onto something more serious, maybe. But the science communication community actually in Ireland is quite large, because when I went to do the master's, I was on Twitter and I realized everybody I was talking to on Twitter was basically really techie.
Yeah.
And so I started following people like Dick Alstrom, the science editor in the Irish Times, and great places like the Science Gallery.
Yes.
And then I met a bunch of people that wanted to do the exact same thing as me. And one of them, Lenny Antonelli, who's also a journalist, started this conversation about science podcasting. Mm-hmm. And we just threw a few tweets and emails back and forth, and before we knew it, we just got together and decided to call ourselves Cybernia, which is, you know, a play on the word Hibernia. So
it's great because I know I was watching that conversation going on, and Lenny was tweeting, and I was part of those emails, I think, at one point. And it's a fantastic name that you came up with for it in the end, Marie. And it's
courtesy of Sylvia Leatham, so a fellow tech journalist.
Excellent.
Also gone into science at the same time, so that really helped. The two of us were graduating from one field into the other.
And a great opportunity, I suppose, when you're changing your focus like that, and when you are doing the postgrad degree as well, that all ties in with that. And it's on radio as well, is that correct? Is my understanding correct on that? It's not just a podcast, it's also a radio show.
Yeah, that's exactly what made it sort of even more appealing for us. We basically bought a few radio quality Zoom digital recorders, and we were like, well, what do we do? How do we get it out there and with a professional audio quality? So we approached Near FM, and they basically agreed to let us use their studios. And even though it started out as a podcast only, we now go out every Thursday at 6:30 from their radio station too. They picked up the show, which
was fantastic.
And then Discover Science and Engineering, DSE, we got funding from them in July, which was great because we started in March. So it was only a few months later, and then we got some funding. So it all sort of took off from there.
So tell me about the show. How long is it? What can people expect when they listen?
It's 30 minutes, so we try to keep it sort of nice and concise. And what we do is it's got a real Irish focus. So we try to look at the science research in Ireland in the various institutes. Because you know yourself, especially in the last few years with budget cuts, people always want to know, what is all this funding going towards Irish scientists? What's going on? And I don't think a lot of the public actually know what happens. happens inside these research institutes. And we were thinking, well, there's loads of great global science coverage, but do you know what happens in the labs around Ireland? And we really didn't ourselves. So we decided basically that was our first main aim, was to go out and interview every possible scientist we could on the latest research they were bringing out. So that's sort of been the driving force for us. And then, of course, through places like the Science Gallery and all the universities, there's always some great speakers. You'll get, we've had, you know, astronauts, astrophysicists, paranormal psychologists, every sort of expert coming through Ireland. And we've just gone and chased them up and interviewed them and put them on the podcast too, because you don't want to miss an opportunity like that.
You mentioned the Science Gallery. You mentioned in particular the Irish Times there as well, and the work that they've been doing for very many years, and indeed in recent times with the supplement Bang. Is that still coming out with the Irish Times?
It is indeed, yeah. It's going strong. I actually wrote a piece on artificial intelligence for the last issue, and it's a really fun, it's a really fun magazine to work for.
It's all, I mean,
and it's great that it's all aimed at children. But it's not talking down to them. It basically assumes that they get high tech, they get complicated science. It just has to be broken down in a way that people can have, you know, conversational tone.
And you know, in addition to that, there's the postgraduate degree you've just done, for example, in science communications. It doesn't take a lot of joining the dots to step back and take a look and realise that there's a concerted official and institutional effort going on in the country to market and sell science, technology, engineering and medicine as career choices and study choices for young people. You know, it's all tying in with that evangelism and advocacy that's going on for science and technology at the moment. How important do you think that is?
But more so because next year is going to be Dublin's City of Science. So we're going to be representing science for all around Europe. It's going to be fantastic. That I think every single science communicator and technologist as well is going to be really excited about us being under the spotlight here in Ireland. So you're right, there's a lot of advocacy going on at the moment for that. So,
is it working?
I think so. I think, well, like I said, people need to know what taxpayers' money is being spent on. I think because a lot of research is government funded, and I think that's working. That we're people trying to get out the message: here's what's being done. Here's what's being done with your tax dollars, and here's what your child could become, and here's the discoveries made here in Ireland that have ramifications on a global scale. People need to see that because. I think there is a lot of excitement around science. There have been for the past few years, especially where it's come onto TV and radio. You know, with Brian Cox on BBC.
Yes,
that sort of, it's like that kickstarted almost this sort of this new scientification, if that's even a word. But it's sort of science has become something that's culturally acceptable and accessible. And before, it hadn't really been, you know, we'd always thought, you know, arts and culture, but we'd never really put science in the mix. And I think now for the first time, people are getting it. People are excited about science stories. It's featured on the news more, and it's featured in the non-science section, like dedicated sections of newspapers. So, I think it's definitely working. But I'd say that would not be a professional science communicator. But yeah, no, it is.
Yeah, because, and the reason I say it is that I think listeners to this podcast, by definition, are going to probably agree with this viewpoint. Listeners to Cybernia, to your show, are going to feel the same way as well, Marie, which is that, you know, to people like us, it's self-evident, science and technology leads to, you know, research leads to innovation, leads to new ideas, leads to intellectual property, which can be exploited and drives the economy forward, and is the kind of thing we need to drive the economy rather than building and selling houses to each other. This is self-evident for geeks and science and technology people. Do you think the message is getting wider acceptance and perhaps maybe even more so in the light of our experience with the property and economic crash?
Well, let's hope it is. But the one thing I would say about focusing on research, scientists and researchers, is that we have to make sure that it's interesting for kids and adolescents and grown-ups too. You can't just say expert Y has done X. I've got to interview experts about everything from paranormal psychology to the possibility of time travel and warp speed. So it's been a really fun gig, and I think if kids can tune into our show and adolescents and they hear people like that talking to them, and we had some guy who was the first ever, he claimed to be the first ever cyborg, and that sort of thing, people go, wait a minute, this is the future of science, is basically where what we thought was science fiction has now come to pass, whereas something gets really exciting and we sort of try to capture that. I suppose the whole point of being a science communicator is that you hope you're going to be a storyteller, and we weave a story around the various scientists that you encounter. So it's just making it fun and exciting.
Well, it sounds great, Marie. Where can people find your work now? Where are you writing and where can you be found online and in print, I guess, and on air as well?
My first port of call is always Twitter, so I'm Pixie Von Dust on twitter.com. But for Cybernia, that's just in case people think it's something to do with Cybermen from Doctor Who, it's actually Cybernia.ie. So if you go there, you'll see all of our different blog posts and you can get all of our podcasts from that. And if you've any interest at all in reading my stuff, you'll find me in the Irish Times. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, Marie, we thank you very much for coming on the show, for myself and Michaela. And the best of luck with everything you're doing. That's it for this week. From myself, Conor Muinichon, from Michaela Nealon, and from our special guest, Marie Boren. Join us again next week for the podcast on technology.ie. Good evening. Slán agus beannacht.